From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 230, recorded live Thursday, August 26th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with John Torresdahl about continuous web deployments.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. This week on Hansel Minutes, we're talking to John Torresdahl, and I pronounced that incorrectly because I'm not Norwegian, but you can tell me how to pronounce your name, John.
Yeah, sure. It's John Torresdahl, or Torresdahl in Norwegian, and thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you on. It's good to see you again, if only virtually. What we're talking about today is no-click web deployment. You've got this series on your blog that you've been talking about doing kind of continuous deployment. We hear about continuous integration a lot. Everyone who's got any project of a reasonable size has a build server. And you've taken that, of course, to a little bit more sophisticated level, and you're doing ongoing continuous deployment. How often are you deploying, and where are you deploying to? What environments are you deploying to?
Well, I mean, for we at our place, we have kind of three environments where we deploy to. The first one being the development environment. The second one being test or staging, and the third one being production. So for development, we're basically deploying at will, or we can, even if we want to, deploy on every check-in, but that will probably be a bit too much work for a build server, but it's technically possible to do. For test and staging, we deploy whenever our testers need to test what we've done in dev in test. And production, like we're running it now, we're doing Scrum with like 2 weeks iterations, that's every second week.
So it sounds like you have removed any constraints to deployment. Like I have a talk that I do about if you're using X copy, you're doing it wrong. And when you're on stage, you say funny things sometimes because they're funny. And one of the things that I say is if you're using Windows Explorer to deploy your website, then you're probably in trouble. Did you always have a continuous deployment situation, or how were you doing it the wrong way first, and then did someone decide finally that this has to stop?
Yeah, I mean, we did what basically most people do, I guess. We have like a company that are running our web servers, so we handed the deployment packages or the. Well, basically, we just X-copied the websites over to them, and they, at a certain time when they had some time to do it, they deployed it on the server. That was for test and production, and for development, we managed that ourselves. So it was a manual process for doing a lot of that, doing IIS changes, doing all changes except from. Like just the files, you kind of need to manage yourself. And that had a cost associated with it, like having people need to do it. And sometimes it has errors related to it as well, because even though we had like, you need to do this and that, and people sometimes missed a step or did something wrong and the deployment didn't work.
So you give them a package, you said, but then you kind of backtracked. You basically either zipped up the files or you X-copied them over there. Did you then give them like a Word document that said, and here's what you need to do to IIS with like screenshots of IIS?
Well, that's what they did in the beginning. So like the first time when we set it up, they needed to have the IIS settings. But from that on, it was basically almost to copy files except whenever we added a new app to a website or something like that, then we manually described how to do that. And later on, we just created a bat file that did that instead using the command line integration to IIS. And so that helped a lot. And but we were thinking, well, we can take this much further. And actually, interesting enough, the kind of main thing that triggered me to kind of do this all the way was because we saw that we're doing Scrum with 2 weeks iterations, and I was thinking, well, do we need these iterations? Because it felt like we were have this pause between iterations that was unnecessary. We felt kind of we have an artificial pause. And of course, we were looking into Kanban and Lean and how those things work. And I figured, well, if we're going to do the Kanban way, it's kind of hard to do that if we can't deploy at will. So that was basically what triggered us to automate the whole thing.
And was the pause that you found between iterations purely one around deployment, or was it an artificial pause?
Well, it's more like you kind of have the stories that you need to finish within those 2 weeks. And some stories finish before others, and people start to pick up like smaller tasks towards the end of the sprint, because that's the only thing you have time for. It just felt weird. So I was thinking, well, what if we can just start a story, finish it, and deploy it? Well, test and deploy it, of course. And just keep that going instead of having these fixed length work periods that we need to relate to.
So deployment for most people, like you described at the beginning, is just copying stuff. But if you have multiple web servers that you also have to, you know, maybe take nodes online or offline, you have to ask yourself, if I'm going to be putting something out into production, am I shutting production down? Am I going to put up a, you know, we're down for 5 minutes kind of a warning? Upgrades can be a little bit more subtle, a little more complicated than putting out all new fresh code. And also just manual tasks. Where did you start from copying files? I mean, I can visualize that you have deploy.bat that probably went off and X copied things. Did you start using web deploy at that point, or what we call MS deploy?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the next step. So I started to look at that. And while looking at MS Deploy, and I was looking then at the command line version of MS Deploy, and later looked at the integration we now have in Visual Studio 2010. So I kind of tried to figure out how to do it on a command line, and not for one app, but for a complete website with all its apps. So I kind of that's also what my blog post is describing, how to do this per website. Later on, I've seen that we could probably have done this with Visual Studio instead, created a web deployment package with web deploy or mm-hmm. MS deploy for each app, and then deploy them individually. What we're doing today is that we deploy each website to the destination.
So you're saying that you have multiple projects that build into multiple websites that all make up one larger application. You build those all into some central location?
Yeah, actually, the solution how it is today is that it's integrated with a build server. So the build server, after it's build all the files, just copies. We have a custom task that copies all the application files in the file structure that we using on the web servers. So typically a folder for the website name, and then for all the folders for the virtual directories mm-hmm. and applications under there, and that hierarchy. I just drop them in there, and I'll have MS Deploy just point to that directory and ask it to package it down. But that's just the file part. And then, of course, you have the IIS settings, certificates, Well, yeah, that's basically the most important part, I guess. And those packages are then automatically deployed to the two first environments we have, so to development and test. And we do a manual trigger to do it for production.
Okay.
And you mentioned having servers. I mean, if we have multiple servers and things like that, what we do have is a load balancer so that we can pull a server out of the load balancing cluster without affecting users. And we usually also have a server available and not being in the cluster. So we usually start by deploying to that server. What we did then was that we wrote some PowerShell script, basically working on the load balancer to take a node offline automatically and bring it online again when the deployment was finished. We were using application request routing module for IIS today.
Right, ARR.
Right, and we used to use the Windows load balancer, the default one in Windows Server, but we had some problems because that was built on like something called sticky sessions on IPs or client affinity. And we had a lot of users coming from the same IP, so we weren't able to load balance them. So we went to ARR because that has sticky sessions on using cookies. So we can differentiate every user behind the same IP, making us able to load balance. So, yeah, and having a load balancer, it's something I really recommend for any website, even if you don't need it because of scaling. Just have it there so that you can bring a website or a web server down without taking a website offline.
Yeah, it's surprising how many problems will start up when someone starts using when someone adds a second machine into a farm. All sorts of coding problems, application problems, state problems that they never really thought about. But if you always have test include two machines, regardless of what your original scale needs are, you're going to catch those things much earlier. And then, like you said, you get to practice taking load balancers down, taking nodes down, and being able to seamlessly upgrade the servers without any, you know, virtually any downtime at all. But there were a couple of things that were interesting there, I thought. And I want to break it down so the listeners understand kind of where one tool stops and where another begins. At the beginning, you talked about you have MS Build, and you had some custom tasks. So you took the time to actually write a couple of custom tasks, it sounds like, in MS Build. But then you use PowerShell to make changes to IIS. And then you have Web Deploy in there as well. When should someone know when to use PowerShell, which seems like a very blunt instrument, a very powerful tool that can do anything, versus one of the more specialized tools like MS Build or Web Deploy?
Well, that's a good question, because I created this whole solution with just PowerShell in the beginning. And then I had looked at MS Deploy earlier, but MS Deploy is kind of hard to just look at, get it, and do it. That's hard. At least the command line version. I mean, if you're using it inside Visual Studio, it's simpler. I mean, it's simple. But the command line version, you need to study it. You need to figure out all the inner workings of what's going on in order to get a complete picture of what it's capable of doing. So I happen to briefly look at it, and I tweeted a message saying, well, I feel this is really hard to learn. Am I the only one? And the Web Deploy team came back to me on Twitter. I think a guy called Bilal Aslam from the Web Deploy team saying, well, what can we do for you? What's your problem? So I sent him a long email describing the pain points I had at that time, basically a user looking at the tool for the first time. And we had some emails back and forth, and I think they agreed with me, and it looks like they're gonna look at how to improve the user experience, at least for a kind of first-time user. So, what I when I started to use that tool, then I quickly realized how much that tool can do for me. So that re replaced a lot of the PowerShell scripts that I had. The majority of them, actually. The only PowerShell script I have left is the one that's that is taking the load balancer node off and online. So that was good, and that was really helpful for my team as well, because it's really important for my team to understand this process. So that, I mean, I might not work for this company forever, so whenever I leave, it's good that somebody can keep maintaining this process. So that was important. But after probably something like 16, 20 hours of using and trying out MS Deploy, I came up with this pretty long command line, which solved every problem we had as for packaging all the things we needed and deploy it on the server. So it was hard to kind of figure out that command, but when you have it, it's lovely. And that's basically my second blog post is that command. Of course, it's specific to kind of how we do things. Like I said, we deploy a website, and you might be able to simplify it, but yeah.
This is the part of the show where I mock you. Well, actually, Telerik mocks us. Your applications that you're testing dependent on external systems over which you have no control. Maybe you're being slowed down by those systems, their lack of availability, responsiveness. You want to do TDD right? Our friends at Telerik help you solve some of those problems with their newest mocking tool, JustMock. It'll let you do fast, simple, controlled unit tests independent of external resources like databases, web services, proprietary code. Unlike some mocking tools, JustMock works with non-virtual methods, sealed classes, static methods, giving you complete control of your code. You can get more details. You can download JustMock at Telerik.com/JustMock. And don't forget to thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/Telerik. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, MS Deploy, which is the underlying kind of command line executable that makes the web deploy thing work, is interesting because from Visual Studio, it's easy to deploy. But if you're going to work on anything of any size, you really don't want to deploy from Visual Studio. You want to think about getting your build server to do that. The UI is really simple, and you know, I deploy nerddinner.com from Visual Studio. It's a tiny little app, and it's not a big deal. Doing it from the command line, though, MS Deploy has this kind of weird verb noun thing that is limited by the command line. So you find yourself going, you know, hyphen verb this and hyphen this, that, and it goes on for, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of characters. And it's insanely powerful, but writing stuff at the command line is a huge hassle.
Yeah, and it's really generic, which makes it powerful, and it's created to not only do deployment but to solve other things as well. So people are using it to migrate stuff from one server to the other, and I think it's targeting both IT people and developers like myself. So it covers a lot of ground.
Yeah, I think that the idea that you can package something up is what's significant about it, that you can describe all the settings that your application needs around app pools or certificates or bindings, put it all in this manifest, and then install it. And then if you want, what's nice about it from a web farm perspective is you can say, this package is perfect, just change these three parameters, like the name and the password will be different on this machine instead of that machine. So you kind of override what's already inside of the manifest.
What's basically hard about it is how to figure out how to like query the thing you want to change and how to actually replace it. And MS Deploy has this concept of doing replacements, but also creating parameters. So what I ended up with, but basically I wanted to create parameters for every changes I wanted to do to the package, so I could just have like one package for all three or per environment, and then just during deployment I'll just send in the parameters I needed, which were specific for that server or for that environment. However, replace and parameter works a bit different. So a parameter actually replaces the whole attribute you're targeting, while replace can replace parts of that attribute value. And that got a bit problematic. So what I ended up was doing a bit of replace and a bit of parameters. I explained this in that blog post, so it's probably easier to get an overview there. But I think that was the trick in order to get this as painless as possible.
Right, and we'll include links to both of those blog posts in the show notes. And you have a very nice organized build deploy process that explains actually step by step by step in text what you're doing. One of the things I also wanted to kind of dig a little bit more into was this idea of taking the load balancer nodes offline and online. And I'm not sure if everyone who listens has multiple web servers, but if you do, you typically have a load balancer that makes the decision about whether or not you're going to go to this machine or that machine. So if you have www.hanselman.com, there might be a www1 and www2 in the background. It's getting routed back and forth. And when you upgrade, typically you do rolling upgrades where you'll remove a server from the farm, you'll upgrade it, you'll test it, and you make sure it's good, and then you'll roll it back into the farm. And it sounds like you were using PowerShell and PowerShell remoting before. And this is what I did. Actually, I did this before PowerShell remoting existed. Actually, we wrote a service, a little Windows service that actually hosted PowerShell 1.0 before PowerShell supported remoting. And then we would remote in, kind of like the way people use Shush, use SSH now. We remote in, we take the server down, we do things to IIS, and then we deploy. But now there's this thing called the Web Farm Framework. Can you talk about what you do in PowerShell versus what the Web Farm Framework can do?
So as I said, I created everything in PowerShell, and then I looked at MS Deploy, and then I briefly also looked at the Web Farm Framework. The first thing I noticed was that the WebFarm framework is currently in beta, I guess. So I wasn't too sure if I want to go and use that. But I mean, that basically replaces the last PowerShell script I have left, if I use that, as far as I can understand. The only reason for me not implementing that yet is basically because of time, I guess. But there were also some issues. If I remember correctly, I was trying to look at how to use it. But I think they are solved now. I was just looking through this mailing list, and from what I've read, it will solve my problems. So and as you said, basically. Integrates with load balancer. I think it only now integrates with ARR, but it looks like they have plans for integrating with other load balancers in the future. But that tool does, of course, do a lot more than just working with the load balancer. It basically do provisioning so that you just define a master server. One master server, and you deploy to that, and the WebFarm framework just makes sure that it provisions everything over to the other servers in that same cluster. And of course, that makes it really easy because you don't have to think about all the servers that are actually in your cluster, because it would provision all the changes over. And if I'm not mistaken, it will, of course, handle all the, taking servers on and offline so that the users of the website won't notice downtime or anything like that.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it seems like it's something that should have been included right out of the box. And the way that it integrates makes it feel like it was there all the time. Like if you go into IIS 7 now, you have app pools and sites. And we all know about the little, you know, the little sites tree that opens up. This adds a new one that says server farms. And then you can have the servers within your server farm. And you can go in and say, well, here are the applications that I have that I want on those servers. And here are the quote unquote products that I want. Like by products, this is like going into, add remove features and saying, well, I need ASP.NET and I need static content and I need HTTP compression. And then you just hit OK and it pushes those out to make sure that everything is provisioned. And like you said, you don't have to think about anything. And once it's installed, it does feel like it's been there all the while. And I particularly like the PowerShell stuff because you can literally say, remove server and add server from the start server, stop server, remove server, new server from the command line, which of course, the irony of all these kind of things, and one of the good things and the bad things about Microsoft is that we've all, as developers, written this stuff before, you know? I mean, I totally wrote get web farm and totally wrote remove server in PowerShell, you know, 5 years ago, but now it's out so I can do refactoring via subtraction, you know? I can remove the code I wrote. I mean, it's interesting. You're describing all the custom stuff that you did and how you're slowly moving over to the kind of the standard solution. Mm.
I guess there's maybe one reason why we still might not go for the web form framework. And that is when we deploy to production, I said, let me just work really quickly through the build process and a package thing. So we build everything on the server. We create the packages for the dev environment and the test environment and the production environment. And we take, like for dev and test, everything is automated. But for production, we manually initiate the deployment process. And one of those things that we do then is that you need to log on using the PowerShell script so that you provide a username and password, which then will be used to get access to the deployment server that you're going to deploy to. And you're also being prompted for a couple of other passwords, for instance, like password for getting access to certificates and stuff like that. That's just a step in order to secure that not any dev or anybody in the office can suddenly accidentally deploy to production. There's also a security thing where there are certain passwords we have stored, which not that many people should know about, for systems we're integrating with, like web services and stuff like that. And then we can deploy to one server. So it automatically takes that server offline, deploys to it. And what we usually do then is that we like point our hosts file to that server so that we can test the web applications running on that server. So we're the only one that get access to that. So if you go come in from the outside, we'll hit the others. We test that, make sure that everything went okay. And then we go to the next step and say, well, everything's fine, deploy to the others. So we'll bring that first server into the cluster and take the other ones out and then upgrade them and bring them back online.
So, you had a couple of tips within this process that's up on your blog that we'll link to that I thought were significant tricks because they are things that the listener can use that you've discovered kind of while you're in the trenches. One of them I thought was really interesting was you said clear all of the IIS settings and completely recreate the IIS schema.
Right. That's definitely what I did in the PowerShell scripts. Then I literally just cleaned the whole IIS. And, I did a backup of the settings. I cleared every content within IIS. And then I started my script basically adding sites and applications and certificates and stuff like that. So my argument for doing that is to avoid the manual process getting in the way of or making errors. Because if somebody does a manual step, mm-hmm. and next time you deploy, that manual step will be overridden if it's not included in the script or whatever you're using. So it's just a way to force you to use the scripts and avoid manual errors.
Well, that is so important. I mean, if there's one thing that people should get out of the whole concept of continuous integration and then expanding that into continuous deployment is anything that you do manually will be screwed up at some point by somebody.
Yeah, and all these things you do manually, I mean, in this whole process are screaming for automation, because basically everything you do manually has some kind of tool or a script or something associated with it. So you can always just trigger that. And that's also why I often prefer using the server core version of 2008. Because you have
right.
to
server
do
server core doesn't include a user interface, so you're forced to script everything.
Right. Yeah. Of course, you can get a remote connection to the IIS and handle it from some other computer, but there are ways of like getting a user interface locally and work on it remote. But I just think that since you get a tiny bit of extra perf, I guess, using server core and the scripting part as well, then yeah, that's what I prefer.
Well, the other two things that you recommend are kind of two sides of the same coin. First, pre-compile the websites. Take advantage of the fact that you are in the middle of a build process, and not just do your standard compilation, but pre-compile the entire site, the ASPX pages and all of that stuff. And then on the other side of the coin, actually take advantage of the IIS warm-up module. Literally warm your applications up. Don't throw a cold app out into a server farm and hope that he's going to be okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you, like we do, we can deploy during work hours, right? It doesn't matter. But if you deploy a cold app during work hours, the poor guy that hits, or the poor guys that hit that server the first time after it's being upgraded will get that hit. So pre-compile or warm up, it's a must if you're at least gonna deploy at will at any time. Well,
and not to mention the application itself, that poor application, not just the poor user, but the poor application who's gonna have to do their best to get up. It's almost like having someone run a race and you're adding a new person to the race, except you're going to have them jump out of a car that's moving and then start running right away. That's asking an awful lot of an application to do all of the things it needs to do to cache and get ready and warmed up while everyone else is running full speed.
Yeah, definitely. And what we've done in dev and test is that whenever you, let's say you're manually starting a new build for test, mm-hmm. for instance, if you need to get that, it's really important for you to get that deployment out right now. You might just opt out on the pre-compile step. In our case, it saves you like 15 minutes because you just want to get it out there and test it. But of course, you need to wait maybe a minute or something for the app to warm up. But for production, it's pre-compilation is always on. We have to do that.
Very cool. So I'm going to put links to all of this up on the web. Are you going to continue this process? Are you going to have, is there going to be a part 3 and a part 4?
Yeah, I have published part 2, I guess, a week or so ago, maybe more. I was hoping to get the other two others out by now, mm-hmm. but time issues and stuff like that. I'm almost finished with part 3, which will cover the load balancing part. I'll just drop the PowerShell scripts out there so people mm-hmm. can use them. And part 4 is, I guess, the build process, how you can get everything all of these things integrated into to the build and have everything triggered from that from there. And as part of this whole process, I also started using TFS 2010. So I then used the workflow steps and things like that, the workflow part of MS build, which was also interesting. And I have some annoyances there as well, but everything can't be perfect.
Yeah, well, and also it's funny how actual work interferes with blogging.
Yeah, and not to talk about actually spending time with family and
not to mention family.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Cool. Well, thanks so much for spending the time with me today.
It's been great.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.